Represent a little different constituency here today. My name is Rita Aris, and I am a faculty from academia. And I have been very privileged to be assigned fairly consistently to a local health department for the last 6 years. This local health department is where I live, where I pay taxes to help support them, where I'm on several boards and committees. So I have a pretty high investment in this local health department. So let me tell you a little bit about where we are situated in this talk today. The local health department is St. Clair County, Illinois, which is located in the southwestern corner of the state of Illinois. We have approximately 256,000 people residing in our county. About 30% of the county are African American, and the remainder are primarily Caucasian. We have very few other minority groups represented in our county. We have an ongoing concern in our county with excessive infant mortality rates. Our infant mortality rates are consistently above those of the state and have been from the beginning of time of this local health department, which has been in existence for the last 20 years. And along with that, as you would suspect, is a high prematurity rate, high rate of low birth weight infants, and a high rate of tobacco use amongst our clients that are served in the Family Case Management and WIC program. About one-third of the women served in that program use tobacco. So I began this project in cooperation with my colleagues at the health department about 3 years ago because I had this nagging concern about this persistence of this problem with infant mortality, and developed a small study that was internally funded by my university to look at the counseling strategies and communication strategies used by the family case management WIC nurses in the clinic. And the method I used was to observe the visits in the room after gaining permission from the nurses and from the patients, and to then interview the nurses and patients. So what I found from the study, that this encompassed just a small number of patients, 19 patients, 8 nurses. But by that time, I was beginning to get into some repetitive patterns here. Concerns about scheduling problems, having to do too many tasks, too many people in the room, kids, mothers, fathers in the room, length of the visits. But overall, the nurses enjoyed patient education, but they weren't so confident about how effective that they were. Their questions regarding tobacco were guided by questions on the WIC assessment forms, and they were very few in number and not very logically sequenced. And then when it came time to advise cessation, the strategies employed by the nurses were usually, you know, this is bad for your baby, don't you, and you really do need to quit. What was missing? No questions about the client's beliefs, personal belief system. No questions about the client's desires to quit or previous quit attempts. They ask about other smokers in the home, but didn't really ask about if there was any social support, and not very many strategies really employed. And never was there mention about the long-term benefit to the mom's health. So the next step was, what do we do with this information? Well, the health department was able to secure a March of Dimes grant, a small March of Dimes grant, and we undertook a 3-part staff development program. So I started out by reviewing the results of the study and reassured the nurses, although they were skeptical about how important and impactful that they could be, they really do have a very important role in this. And then came up with a strategy that is based on some evidence of success from a framework developed by the Centers for Disease Control for tobacco cessation counseling, and this is to ask, advise, assess, assist, and arrange. And then really came up with some strategies that would be based on Prochaska DiClemente's stages of change model, and we developed some case studies that they could use in the staff development sessions. And I thought that this was going along pretty well, although there was still some residual skepticism. We developed some specific forms to guide their assessments, educated them on quit strategies that they could lay out to the clients, and updated their educational materials. But again, how do we do all of this when there's no time? You've heard this before, I'm guessing. We developed a new protocol where the clients would answer some questions as they waited in the waiting room, and they would then be placed into the stages of change. Are they contemplating changing? Are they getting prepared to make that change? Or are they really in the throes of giving up tobacco? And we developed an elaborate color coding assessment forms and the counseling forms that went with this. And again, updated education materials. All is great, right? So for example, if a client said, yes, I am thinking about quitting in the next 30 days, that would characterize them in the preparation stage. So you'd assess previous quit attempts, their social support, get them to commit to a quit date and see if they were interested in nicotine replacement therapy, and then follow up with a phone call around the time if you were successful in getting a quit date. Well, this didn't go so well. In the worst case, the nurses were resistant and they pretty much ignored the protocol. And in the best case, we did have a few nurses that really embraced it and, you know, they tried their best, but it was hit and miss at best. But this, you know, the general census wasn't working well, but we weren't really sure that it wasn't working. So we undertook another study on a larger, more systematic scale, 18 months after implementing the protocol, and looked at, actually this should say 151 randomly selected patient records, about 20% of the patients in that time period who had been delivered. And we looked to see if they were indeed using the protocol of asking, assessing, advising, assisting, and arranging, and then documenting some of the client demographic characteristics. So what did we find? Out of the randomly selected charts, about two-thirds of the clients were non-tobacco users. So again, we're fairly consistent with about a third using tobacco. 54 tobacco users, 18 of them quit before they ever met their first WIC appointment. 11 quit by delivery. 15 cut down by delivery. So with that, maybe the news wasn't so terribly bad. We had 10 out of that, 90 out of the 54 tobacco users who really didn't change their tobacco use. As far as the nurses' documentation patterns, they were good about documenting again on the initial visit, is the client smoking or not, and it was hit and miss on subsequent visits. They were really varied in their consistency of their documentation, but we had to assume if they didn't take the time to document it in the computerized record system that they really weren't providing the counseling. So as far as the strategies to assist and arrange the clients, we observed that there were, again, few quit strategies. They were trying to get a push for a quit date. They were offering praise for the clients who were progressing and, again, handing out written materials. But very seldom was nicotine replacement therapy explored with the client, referred to a support group or quit line, and absolutely no evidence that we could see of use of the protocol. There were a few success stories, though, among the nurses that we looked at, and we didn't really categorize. This was more anecdotal. Several of the nurses who were very persistent in documenting at every visit whether the client was smoking or not, those nurses seemed to have the most success rate in getting clients to move along in cessation. So this it is just really pretty rough data here. Just looking at the numbers, this is a snapshot in 2004 when the project was started, 2006 when we audited, and again in 2007. This is from our state cornerstone data collection system, that it looks like we're not really making too much headway here between when we started and where we are today in terms of getting women to stop, although it does look like we are, by the time we reach postpartum, that more women are actually stopping, or we have better documentation. So you really, it's a little hard to tease out what's happening here. So what's next? Well, we have to keep trying because our infant mortality rates are still alarmingly high. Our tobacco use patterns amongst our clients are still alarmingly high, and it's an obligation that we have as professionals to try to address this. So we had another review session with the nurses this past spring and tried to simplify the protocol, that because that was some of the feedback we'd gotten. It was too complicated. So we tried with a streamlined protocol, and senior management staff was very supportive, and mid-level managers all very supportive, but still some reticence on the part of the nurses. How can we do this? We don't have time. We don't have time with everything else we have to do. So I really, this is up for grabs, but I am committed to this. The nursing supervisors are committed to this concern, and we're going to continue to take this on as a project. We have some new nurses. We've had probably a third of the nursing staff have turned over in that period of time. And that one successful nurse, there are actually a couple, but one of the very successful nurses is now moved up into a supervisory position. So we're thinking maybe with partnering with her and a couple of the new nursing staff and working intensely with those individuals to build this from the ground up. Probably part of the failure of our progress is because this has been largely top-down. And we know with community efforts that top-down doesn't always work. You know, a lot of times bottoms-up, grassroots on up works better. So why aren't our attempts to change professional nurses any different? Just as with our clients, we know that it takes more than just providing information to help them change. I've been scratching notes frantically here as I've heard my colleagues today about ideas for unfreezing and changing things, holding people accountable. And I look forward to taking this on as a leadership project. I was privileged to attend a leadership institute in the state of Illinois this past month, and I'm going to be doing this year-long leadership internship, and I've committed to taking this on as a project to work on this for the next year. So I hope when I come back here to face you all in a year or two that I will have a success story to tell instead of our attempts now. But in any event, that's where we are. So I'll take any questions. I guess a minute.